I'd like to welcome you this morning to the Easy Does It, But Do It meeting at the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous, celebrating 70 years. I'd like to have you help me open this meeting with a moment of silence to reflect upon why we are here and those who have gone before us, and in gratitude for the AA's recovery of the past 70 years. Thank you. I can't remember if I introduced myself, so I will say, my name is Carol Bruja, and I'm an alcoholic. I come from Concord, Alberta, and it's a pleasure to be here. And once again, the name of this meeting is the Easy Does It, But Do It meeting. We have three speakers with us today to share. We have Dwayne B. from Hyattsville, Maryland. We have Jeanette W. from New Jersey. If you've looked in your book and it says New York, Jeanette tells me that's not correct. She's from New Jersey. So if you'd like to adjust that, there's your opportunity. And we have Larry C. from Stratford, Ontario. And we'll go in the order that's in the program. Please help me welcome Dwayne B. from Maryland.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dwayne. I'm an alcoholic. And it's really good to be here. And my home group is the Cosmopolitan Group in Washington, D.C. Its founder can be found in the Pioneers section of the Big Book Jim story. And my anniversary date is February of 76. I used to start out by saying something that I heard when I first came in. I heard them say that if you're willing to put as much into your recovery as you did into your drinking, then there's no way that you'll miss the boat. And I was a guy that gave my whole self to alcohol, so that meant that I'd have to be willing to put forth that same effort into my recovery. And I made a commitment to myself that whenever I'm asked to do anything in this fellowship, I'm going to do my best to do it, because I would never turn down a drink. And since I've been here, I've really tried to live up to that, and that's really helped me. But when I got that invitation to come up here, that was really an honor, and I'm really glad that I'm here. I'm having a good time. The theme is easy does it, but do it. And I drank to the point that I ended up in a men's detoxification center. And I was one of those people that right from the start, I was having problems with drinking. I started drinking at the age of 15. And right off the bat, I was having problems with alcohol. And I always mention this teacher, because this man tried to help me. I hadn't been drinking but a couple of months, 15 years old. And this man said he had something for me. He gave me a book on alcoholism. And I resented it. I just got started drinking, and this man gives me a book on alcoholism. But the man gave me the book because I was coming into his classroom drunk. And, you know, the man really tried to help me, and I had to really come into Alcoholics Anonymous to find out that I was sick long before I picked up a drink. I had problems all through school. I stayed back in the second grade. I don't know how you stay back in the second grade, but all through schools, I had problems. But when I started drinking, that man gave me that book, you know. I associated alcoholism with someone standing on the corner drinking wine, bumming money, that kind of thing. I couldn't see myself as having a problem with alcohol. But at the end of that same school year, I stayed back again. And I ran into one of my friends, and they said, well, look, why don't you go down there and talk to the teachers? Maybe they'll change your grade. That same man that gave me that book on alcoholism, I went to his classroom. I told him he should have passed me, and it turned into a fight. And it wasn't much of a fight. He beat me up, threw me down the steps. I was drunk, and they called the police on me. They were trying to talk to me, and I wouldn't listen. The man knew I was sick. He didn't press no charges. But I always share that experience because these things were happening to me right from the start. So by the time I got here, which was the age of 23, I mean, I was real good and crazy when I got here. I was just one of those that this thing really hit me hard. I was a guy that was shy, withdrawn, so when I drank that alcohol, I could kind of come out of myself. All of those fears went away. All of those feelings of inadequacy went away. And I think that's why I went at it so hard. But by the time I was 23, and I heard a term when I came in, I'd become a do-nothing drunk at the age of 23. And in the area where I'm from, Washington, D.C., a lot of liquor stores, a lot of liquor stores. And I'd gotten to the point where I was scraping a penny to get a drink. I'd pass three liquor stores to get to one liquor store because they sold their Gilby vodka 3 cents cheaper than the guy that was right around the corner from me. I mean, drinking at that time had become the most important thing in my life. And, you know, I had dreams and aspirations. I wanted to be somebody. I dropped out of school in the ninth grade because drinking was more important than going to school. And, you know, the jobs that I would get, jobs making minimum wage, not too much to them. I'd drink before I got there, drink on the job, and drink when I left. So consequently, I couldn't hold down a job. So, but I got tired of living like that. I wanted to be somebody. I admired people that had jobs, that had families, that kind of thing. And, you know, I was a fantasizing drunk. I'd drink that stuff and go off into a fantasy world. You know, I'm a get me a good woman. I'm a get me this. I'm gonna get me that, that kind of thing. But I'd become a bum. And I tried to stop drinking on my own. By this time, I was physically addicted to alcohol. If I didn't get a drink, I'd go through DTs. I'd start shaking and trembling and hearing things. And actually, I'd been in treatment programs. I'd been director of programs in my teens, but I wasn't ready to stop. My thing was give me some medication, give me some pills, but I don't want to give this stuff up. But I realized I was going to have to stop or I was going to die. And I tried to stop drinking on my own. I couldn't do it. I could not stop drinking. And I got the number to this detoxification center. And I always talk about this place because I really believe that this was like a turning point for me. And it's really been important in my sobriety because I take a meeting there. I go back there every other Wednesday. I've been doing that 28 years. I take a meeting there to remind myself of where I come from. And it lets me know where I go if I take a drink. When I got there, it was called men's detox, the smell of urine, vomit, just people hadn't bathed in a long time. And I got in there, and I met a guy named Mr. Branch. And this guy, he reminds me when I read the big book of Dr. Silkworth, because he wasn't an alcoholic, but he went the extra mile. He really did a lot to help us. And he kind of pulled me over to the side and started asking me some questions. And really, I was a liar and a thief even before I started drinking. My lying and stealing progress is my drinking progress. By the time I ended up in there, I was lying all the time. But it was something about the way that this man was talking to me. And the fact that I was in there, thought ran through my head that if you want some help, you got to stop lying. And he was just asking me basic questions like how much I drank. And a question about my work history. I said I was drinking around a fifth a day or whatever I could get. It didn't matter what it was. I told him I had a son by this time and I wasn't doing nothing for him. At the end of the conversation, he told me that I was a sick young man. And he suggested that I go to St. Elizabeth's Hospital. And I know many of you are not familiar with that hospital, but if you ever hear about people jumping over the White House fence or doing anything crazy, and why, that's where they always send them. The St. Elizabeth's Hospital. And when the man sent me there, now this is what he told me. He told me I was sick and he said I was going to need some more help. That just going through this detox facility wasn't going to be enough. And he suggested I go to that program. And I knew what St. Elizabeth's Hospital, if you're in Washington, you know what St. E's is. It's one of the biggest nut houses on the East Coast. But when he said to me, he said, it's one of the best programs on the East Coast. Now, he knew how to appeal to the alcoholic ego, you know, because that really did impress me. You know, he sent me to the nut house, but he sent me to the best one on the East Coast. And let me tell you this. I really believe that it was. It helped me and it helped so many other people. When I got over there, I met a guy. Actually, when I got over there, they put me in what they call a general admissions unit. And these were wards where they weren't necessarily alcoholics. They had all kind of folks on that ward. And I remember the psychiatrist was asking me questions like what year it is and who's the president. And I was so scared I might miss one of them questions. And I said they might keep me on this locked ward the rest of my life. But they went ahead and put me on the alcohol unit. And believe me, My life's been getting better ever since. I'm living good today. I'm living good today, but it's only as a result of being involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got over there, I met some people who helped me to understand some things about myself that I wasn't aware of. Number one, there were two things that were real important for me. I knew I had a problem with alcohol. You don't drink to the point that you're doing like this and not know you got a problem. But I didn't understand the disease. In my mind, I felt like if I could stop for a period of time, a year or 2 years, certainly by 3 years, I'd be cured and I'd be able to drink again. And they cut that off right from the start. They said it didn't matter how long you stopped drinking. If you're an alcoholic, if you go back to drinking, you're going to end up right back where you were or worse unless you come back in here. And I thank God that they didn't waste no time sending us back down to detox for that meeting, because I would go to detox and I saw what happened to people that went back to drinking. And to this day, I haven't seen not one person come in here and go back to drinking and their life got better. The other thing that was important was that I thought that all I needed to do was stop drinking and everything was going to be all right. I was going to be happy. I was going to be rich. I mean, everything was going to just work out fine. This is what I really believed. And they helped me to understand that wasn't going to happen either. And there was an old timer, Garrity, this guy, he's passed on now. He used to say that he was always sober when he took the first drink. He used to say something must have been wrong with him when he was sober in order for him to pick up something that he knew was killing him. And he used to say he had a sober problem. And that's when he would direct me to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I try to practice those principles in my affairs. I want to say all my affairs, but I come up short. That's why I have to keep coming back. I ended up staying in that facility for a year. I always say it was the best year of my life, but I never want to have to go through that again. It's the best year because they gave me the foundation that I built my sobriety on. The most important thing they told me to do was go to meetings. They told me that it was a spiritual program, not a religious program. I started praying over there at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, and that's something that I do on a regular basis. And when I left St. E's, they told me, they said, a guy like you, because I wanted to go back home and live with my mother. I'd been irresponsible all my life. They said, look, a guy like you, you need to get your own place and learn how to take care of yourself. Learn how to pay bills, work, and do all of that stuff sober. And I took their advice. I did what they told me to do. The man that helped me the most, Mom McCaskill, he was the guy that had me take that detox commitment, because he said, get you some commitments because they help nail you down. But he used to always say this too. He used to always talk about easy does it. Easy does it. Patience and tolerance. I was very impatient, extremely impatient when I came in here. And one of the things that helps me the most in terms of easy does it is prayer and meditation. I used to hear people talk about prayer and meditation. And I started praying over there in Chinese, but I wanted to start meditation because I heard people talk about the benefits of meditation. And I used to try to sit still and just kind of quiet my mind. I couldn't do it. Thoughts would just be running through my mind. I lived by myself and nobody would be in the house. I get caught up in my own thinking. I get mad and there's nobody in the house just based on my own thinking. I had a hard time sitting still with myself. And what I realized, I could really see who I've been running from all my life was me. In my thinking, but I would no more do without prayer and meditation a day, as our literature says, than food or sunshine. And it's one of the things that really helps me to take it easy. Easy does it. Just kind of relax a little bit. When I wake up, I read some literature. I get down on my knees, ask God to help me stay alcohol free. Like I say, I meditate for about 30 minutes a day. And for me, now, I go to a meeting every day, and that's not for everybody, but in the area that I live in, there's just so many meetings, and there's some folks here now supporting me in our area. That's how we do. We help each other. But I like going every day because in our literature it says that every attendance at an AA meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we right relate ourselves to Him. Let me tell you about one of the benefits that have happened. I told you I was unemployable when I got here. You can't work a job when you're doing like this all the time. And just 6 months ago, I was able to retire off a job. That's through the grace of God. That's through this program. Now, I'm still doing some work, but just a whole lot of blessings have come my way. I was able to go back to school, graduate with honors, another blessing. Like I said, I'm just living good today. But I keep this program up front. It's still the most important thing in my life. And what they used to tell me when I was in St. Eve, it was kind of one of the things I kind of grabbed onto. They said, if it can work for a drunk like me, it can work for anybody. And I really believe that today. I've seen all kind of people get sober. And then they said, it's just a day at a time program. Day at a time. Thank you.
Thanks, Dwayne. Great message. Next, we're going to hear from Jeanette W. from New Jersey.
Ooh. Good morning, everybody. God loves you, and I love you. My name is Jeanette W. I'm from Irvington, New Jersey. My sobriety date is July 23rd, 1972, and for that I'm so grateful for. I belong to the Crossroads group. If you're ever in New Jersey, Crossroads group, Beth Israel Hospital, 201 Lyons Avenue, Newark, New Jersey. Please come, 8 o'clock Wednesday night. That's one of my groups. I'm going to do something because God is so good. 10 years ago in San Diego, we formed another group, the Stragglers Group. We went over to Kalanawa Island to see that famous hotel. On the way back, there was a Burger King. All us AA people who had these badges on and whatnot, we had an AA meeting there. And we formed the Stragglers group. And one young lady is here. Debbie, I had to do it. She's here from Scotland. We are international all over the world. We had so many at that meeting that stayed on a little bit longer. Love you. God is good. I said my name is Jeanette. I am an alcoholic. I began drinking at the age of 15. I was brought up by foster parents who loved me dearly, who gave me everything in the world they could give me. I started that drinking, hanging out the wrong crowd, ending up in jail for almost a murder. I continued drinking, but I stopped at an age, I think it was about 20. I went into nursing school. I got my nurse's degree. I started working at Mountainside Hospital in Mount Clair, New Jersey. I continue working very well. We formed a bowling team, and on Wednesday nights, we would go on Bloomfield Avenue to the bowling alley. And I got introduced to Tom Collins, which I thought was like a lemonade. Everybody was bowling, and I enjoyed these Tom Collins. I ended up, ladies and gentlemen, going further than Tom Collins. I ended up in the streets of Newark. When I say the streets of Newark, I mean the streets of Newark. Like I said, I went to jail because I slashed a man, almost killing him in a blackout. I've got women very upset today. I am trying to work through something. I know it's easy, does it, and do it. My life today is beautiful. But let's go back a little bit. I'm a My mother and father were alcoholics. They both died from alcoholism. I went to a shelter at one time in Newark. And I found out that my father could sponsor people. And I found out that it gave me a resentment for me to stand up, to stand there and listen to people say he was an alcoholic. I came to the program when I lived on Sherman Avenue in Newark. This lady lived upstairs over me, and she was getting ready to have a baby, which he was going to give up for adoption. And I told her, I said, if you don't give the baby up for adoption, I'll go to this AA meeting. She took me over to Beth Israel Hospital, and they had that meeting on Wednesday night. I went there. I continued going to meetings. I got a sponsor, and she told me to make sure that I tried to make meetings, and I did. I went to these meetings. I just feel like I had to do things my way at the time. I did not want to do what you want me to do. I went and I started back drinking. Then when I came in 1972, I start making meetings like I should. I start making commitments like I should. I went on commitments. I went around to different places. My sponsor, Louise, told me certain things that I had to do. She took me out to step meetings. I got involved with service. And for me, this program has given me a lot. And I made a commitment to this program that I would stay sober one day at a time. And that I have done. I've been through trials and tribulations. I have to say you saying easy does it, but do it. I had a brother which I had to go through with him. Trauma of cancer. I'm trying to work one day at a time to get over that too. Easy does it, but do it. I know that for me, easy does it today for me. I retired in 96, and easy does it today means I have to do what the doctor says. I found out I have a spot on the lungs, and I am taking it. Easy does it. One day at a time. You know, when Doug asked me to speak, I told him, I usually don't speak. I told him that I'm a crier. And I want y'all to know something. I'm grateful for this program that God has put you in my life and given to me. And long as I have you, I know that I can stay sober. Sometimes it's hard. I'm going to have to admit certain things to you, to be honest. I moved into a senior citizen complex in Irvington. And right now I'm going through some trials and tribulations that I'm trying to deal with. And you're the only people I can talk to. I do not have the money to move out, really, out of this complex. that I want to. It's very dangerous. Easy does it, but do it. And I'm trying to do it. I need your help. I'm not going to lie to you right now. Because right now, I can be honest with you. I am so tired of this place where I live. But I thank God I was able to come here to Toronto and left that behind. But I still have it here. You know that. You can feel it. And I am making and I am hurting. Yes, you say I have sobriety. The years doesn't matter. It's what's going on today with me. Okay? And this is the way I feel right now. I need you more than ever. Meetings, meetings, and meetings. And let me bring this stuff out. Many of you all know about New Jersey and what it's like to live there now. And it's hard. But let's get back to my meetings. I let the garbage out. I have to be on it and let it out. I have a meeting at a congressional church about a block from me. It's a noon meeting. That's about the only one I can get to that I feel safe to go to. We got the Crips and the Bloods there. Two blocks from me. But I make that noon meeting. I get all my meat, my food from those guys and gals there. It keeps me going to the next week to that meeting. Okay? Yes, I can call somebody to take me to Crossroads Baptist or Hospital. But they're shooting all along lines, I have none. Okay? And God tells me, don't be no dummy. All right? And I make those meetings, and then I do some volunteer work in my building also that I try to do. Because we have a lot of drug addicts and alcoholics in my building. I'm in a senior building, and you'd be surprised. Right now, they're mixing up the seniors with the disabled. And some of them, I got three girls that goes to the noontime meeting with me. Okay? And then I have one fellow, but he went off and started back drinking. And for me, it keeps me sober to see how some of these people are doing today. So I'm saying to you, for me, it's easy, does it? But do it. When I have in my kitchen, in my little apartment, across my sink, it has easy, does it? Because Jeanette knows that she has to be that way, because if she gets into that other crowd that's around there, it's death for me. Okay? My program, I get on the phone, talk to people, my sponsor, Louise, I talk to her. She may be in here, I don't know. And she's in St. Louis, but we talk almost every day, every week. I have one fellow that I talk to, and he is in East Orange. Every once in a while I call him. But you don't have too many people around my area that goes there. I know today God is watching over me. I know today He won't let anything really happen to me. But I do have to get this fear out of me. And I know this. Break-ins. All I can say to you is pray for me. because I'm going through something right now, and it hurts. I love you all. Please help me. Love you.
I just have an announcement for a moment, please. If there is a Terry Lyons in the audience, his wife is up, I believe, up on the backstage, and she would like him to please go up and see her. I don't really think it's a laughing matter. The gentleman that came and told me that said she's lost. So, Terry, if you're out there, I don't think she necessarily wants to tell you what to do. Maybe I didn't explain that right, but... And in case I forgot to say, Jeanette, thank you very much for sharing. Now, if you'd please help me welcome our next speaker, Larry C. from Stratford, Ontario.
Hello, everybody. My name's Larry. I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't too nervous, but I seem to be kind of nervous now. Happy Canada Day to everybody, and if there's people in this room that aren't from Canada, you're honorary Canadians, because I'm in recovery, and Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to be responsible, and I'll take responsibility for that today. So, with that, I thought it would be a bad idea to go first, getting up here. I wish I would have. It's just kind of the way it goes. And listening to Jeanette, you know, life can be like that sometimes, and it can be a struggle. And that's why we're here, because the reality is we can, when we do struggle today, we struggle in a different way. We're told to talk in the panel today about easy does it, but do it. I can remember early on in my sobriety dates April 16th, 93. The idea of easy doing anything was somewhat foreign to me because I either did absolutely nothing or way too much. My dear mother would say you're like a bowl in a china shop. I don't see the resemblance, but apparently there is some, but you know, that's why I'm here, because apparently I have to change. That's the message I get. I had an excellent sponsor, my first sponsor. He was a straight shooter, sober a long time, and he knew me when I was drinking. And he didn't cut me much slack. And he explained to me that the idea of easy does it, but do it, didn't mean nothing. Didn't mean stop. Because the reality was I didn't like being told what to do. I rarely followed through with anything, honestly. But in my mind, I had all these visions. And I was pretty sharp. Bottom line, I was pretty sharp in my own little world. I can also remember early on in my home group, I'm a member of the shift workers group in Stratford, Ontario, Canada, about 100 miles down the tracks. Thinking about coming here today, like I was in a car accident, I got hit by a car last September, so life's been a little different, but I'm certainly grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and teaching me how to do life one day at a time. And I've come a long way, got a long way to go, but I'm going to get there, and I'm not that big a hurry anymore. It's just what I've learned. It's just what I've learned. There's a gal in our group that used to say to me, Larry, the idea of craving alcohol, you never craved alcohol because you weren't away from it long enough. She kind of got sick of listening to me. You know, she was dear to me. She's passed away now, but excuse me, she's here in spirit with me today. It's nice to have those type of people in my life, in my sobriety. To let you know what I was like I'll tell you how I used to think. I've always been big. Imagine that. You know, I started high school. I was 6'2", 203 pounds, red hair, freckles, glasses, and left-handed. And I was pretty shy. Some of that's changed, and I'm better for it. And you know, some of those things, as my alcoholism, active alcoholism was, and my recovery is, they have made me a better person. Because I've learned to be honest in this program and move ahead, even if it's slow. And the reality was, I've learned the slower I take it, you know, with the desire to go in a forward direction, the better off I am. The offshoot of that is, everybody else around me is a lot better off too. Because I'm not running their life. I'm not trying to shove my thinking or my living down their throat, although I have to adjust it often because of the type of personality I have. I can suffer from big shotism, know far too much, know exactly what my elderly mother needs or my sisters or my brothers or people at work and all this kind of stuff. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to be right-sized and, again, to slow down. And just, you know, take some time to listen, Larry. Sometimes I have to listen. I'd rather be the one doing the talking. Because, you know, I have a lot of intelligence, I have a lot of experience, and I know what everybody in this room needs. You know. But some of that's going away, and again, I'm very grateful for that. I think early on, like in grade 9, I failed high school. I changed all my marks. I intercepted my report card, changed all my marks, had to miss the first day of school the next year because I knew I wasn't going to grade 10. That's how I used to think. My first car was a 65 Mustang, two-door coupe. I had a bottle opener, sheet metal screwed to the dashboard. I don't have the car and I don't drink anymore. You know, my life has changed. That's how I used to think. You know, my alcoholism cost me a family. Through marriage. In reality, there's a lot of damage with the kids yet, my daughter and son. But, you know, there's repairs. You know, the repairs are ongoing because recovery from alcoholism as active alcoholism, it's a family illness. And there's struggles for all of us at times. And sometimes, you know, it rears its ugly head in silence, too. It can in my life and around my life. You know, I was told to keep coming to meetings to get a sponsor. I did that type of stuff. You know, I was told to do whatever I could, and I attempted to do that kind of stuff. You know, service is a part of things, and whether you're on the answering service, you know, greeting at the door, helping at roundups, speaking, all those things. You know, I've been able to do some of those things, but to be quite honest with you, when first approached, you know, I really wanted to say no. Because when it came to the action part of living, I've heard it said all gab and no jab, really. And, you know, I resented that term because it really did describe how I was. So it's remarkable to me now, like we came down by the train this morning and got off at Union Station, walked over here. To get here on time was a bit of a hustle, but it's worth it because I can hardly believe I'm here. I can really hardly believe I'm sitting up here and you people are listening to me. To me, that's bizarre. That's absolutely bizarre. And again, you know, I have a network of people in recovery around me that will put me back to being right-sized if I get out of whack. Because I can get out of whack. There's a part of me that is like that. There's part of my active alcoholism and that lays in wait for me to be a little dishonest. A lot of my dishonesty, although some of it was verbal, a lot of my dishonesty was in silence because I was privy to information about myself that I didn't pass on. The problem was when I didn't pass it on, it was inappropriate almost every time. It's kind of the way I was. I didn't mean to be. There was better information out there. You know, I didn't even seek it. You know, I don't spend a lot of time on if anymore. You know, if will just lead me to a case of liquid idiot or something else. Because that's what I did. You know, I can remember one day my mother asking me one time, when was the last time you didn't drink, Larry? You know, I can stand up here today, I still couldn't answer that question. You know, that was one of the things that really showed me that I had a problem with alcohol. It wasn't the problems at work. It wasn't the arguments with a wife and losing a family. It was some of the things that seemed a lot more subtle. That's the stuff that got to me. Because I had a disease of my feelings. And I ran from them and medicated them constantly. And when I started reading about this kind of stuff, I ended up in the treatment center. I was talking to my doctor one day about something else, and I said, "Doctor, I have to talk to you about something." He said, "What's that, Larry?" And I said, "I think I'm going to lash out." And the doctor almost flipped. You know, I said, "If I lash out, somebody's going to get hurt." He said, "We better talk about this." So we did, and what it did, and to make a long story short, it led me to a favorite place in my world, a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I thought, how am I going to go into a place like that? That led me to a really nice fellow that, you know, I learned to trust a man. And it was a start. It was a start of change for me. I can remember him saying to me, a simple little test. Write down when you drink, Larry, and write down what you were thinking when you were drinking it. I thought, that's no big a deal. As long as I got a couple pens with me and lots of paper, you know, that kind of stuff. Went back to see him the week later. I had pages of stuff. And I had my feelings down and everything. He broke into laughter when I handed him this stuff. He'd never seen anybody do it so well. You know, another example of the fact, you know, my act of alcoholism, I was the only one that wasn't catching on. You know, so that was, you know, again, that was part of me. You know, the power of denial, the power of bearing pain, the power of many things. You know, and now, you know, life is different because I associate with people that went before me that, like I say, I'm a straight shooter. I'm not saying it's the way to be or the way for everybody. It works okay for me. And the people I respect in the program are straight with me because I need that. I just need that. And I seek those type of people out. I love yous all, but I seek those type of people out because you know what? I don't want to manipulate anybody anymore. And I was very, very, very good at that. You know, the two people that spoke before me got me thinking about a lot of different things that I haven't thought about in a while, you know, because when you hear somebody else's story, experience, strength, and hope, you know, all of a sudden something flips up, and you go, geez, yeah. You know, that's twitched something in me. You know, when I go home from here today, you know, whenever, you know, I'm going to take a look at some of that stuff. You know, because I'm in everyone else. Here, I know I am. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, do anything a day at a time. Just that concept itself. If that isn't easy, does it? I don't know what is. You know, I know for this alcoholic in recovery, I can't do it by myself. I tried everything possible. But the reality was I was looking out all the time rather than looking in, and there was so much other stuff wrong. Well, guess what? If I stay away from, you know, the people that I've never been able to please, that solves a lot of that stuff. You know? And just going to the meetings and listening to other people, I started to learn that. I started to take the risk. The risk to share. The risk to be emotional. You know, Jeanette said, the risk to cry in front of a crowd sometimes. Not a big deal. But I think any man should do it once in a while. It sure takes the pressure off. I wouldn't want to be doing it every day, mind you. I don't like it that much. You know, at least this is a safe place to do it, for sure, for sure. And, you know, walking here from the Union Station, like I say, with my accident, it was, you know, I'm trying to hustle as best I can, and, you know, I'm sweating like a sieve, and, you know, I'm saying, you know, go easy there, you'll get there. This is what it's about. You had made the plan. I had a plan to get here. Imagine that. I had a plan to get here. I wasn't going to fight the traffic and be crazy, look for a parking spot, go against all the information that's on the media and everything else. That's the old Larry. I'm glad I'm not so much that way today. The reality is, though, I can be that way in an instant. You know, and it's not, you know, I'm not anything in theory. I'm all that stuff because I've been those things before, and I know I can be those things again. I just know I can. and I don't want the risk of it, and I certainly don't want the burden of it. I really don't. I think as a human being in this day and age, let alone in recovery, you know, I got parts of a few families spread all over the place and kids here, there, and everywhere, ex-in-laws, you know, work, all kinds of stuff. You know, I can't take all that stuff on all the time. You know what one of the remarkable things for me is, in Easy Does It, I started finding out that all that stuff that was wrong isn't all me. Oh, my God. You know, I sure sensed it wasn't all me when I was angry. But that doesn't really count, you know. But when I was quiet, in my quiet time, in prayer or meditation, asking for help, you know, my relationship with a higher power, all that kind of stuff showed me, you know, that, you know, there's room for you in this world, right? You know, that's why the world's so big. There's room for everybody. You know, I have to remember about the person that's still struggling. And the person that's still struggling isn't me every day, because it isn't about me every day. You know, the world doesn't revolve around one struggling, egotistical alcoholic. It just doesn't. You know, it's like I say, walking across from the station and seeing just throngs of people, just walk, everybody's smiling. You know, it's not easy to know exactly where you're going. You're looking at the signs, but everybody's smiling. You just stay with them, and we're all going the same direction. Because you're sure? There's one place you ain't going to change the direction. I know that. I'm, oh, my God. You know, and something really neat happened this morning. Train ride, haven't had a train ride in a long time. Got a chance to use the washroom and the train while it was moving. You know, there's an experience. You know, because I knew it was a long walk from there to here. when I got here. But, you know, it's nice to come to a meeting. It's nice to be considered to be part of something. It's nice to have people come to me and want me to listen. It's nice that I have people to go to so they can listen. I think it's nice just to be with some people that want me there and want me to come back. You know, I'm here this weekend to meet some new friends. I've met some already. You know, I've met a room full. You know, there is a power in the rooms. There just is. I know regardless of what I go through physically here today, mentally, spiritually, you know, I need this. I need this. Last weekend in September, Sunday afternoon, I just got home from a men's spiritual retreat. I thought everything was going great. You know, Wednesday morning, I get run down by a car. You know, I was complaining about my job, and I didn't like my job. I was sick of the crap. Well, I get run down. I haven't been to work since. You know, trust me, you don't want to do it that way. But that's, you know, that's me, though. That's me. And there's a few people that remind me of that every day. You know, be careful what you pray for. You know, like I understand that kind of stuff. I do. I like to laugh. I like when I go someplace, generally, when people see me, they smile. That's nice. You know, that's heartwarming. It just is. They weren't doing that 15 years ago when I was considering the idea of not drinking. The reality of not drinking? Like, I thought this was a joke. Like, I thought it was impossible. I thought it was a coup. I thought it was something. But, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was ill. That's just, you know, where my head was at that time. You know, I'm just not quite as ill this moment. And if I put this moment together with the next moment and the next moment, I'm told I won't be living in the past or the future. And that will help me stay away from trying to please people I've never been able to please or get approval from them. And one of those people is myself. I've learned to live with myself, and I've had to spend a lot of time with myself the last 9 months, but I have a good network of people around me. I have a network of people, you know, and it's absolutely amazing. You know, and I don't have to ask. They're there because they're concerned, because collectively, in the Easy Does It mode, I think we can do anything. It's just going to take a bit. And if we all do just a bit, you know, if our deal that day is to listen, if our deal that day is to talk, if our deal that day is to go somewhere and speak, or reach out or answer the phone or do the banking or whatever we have to do to be part of a recovery group. I recommend it to everyone, to anyone, really. I really do. But if you're like me, you are very reluctant to do it. And I've heard it said that if you come here, you know, you get love back to health. I like that. Because that statement bridges a lot of awkward stuff. Especially for guys. But women too. Because it's awkward stuff if we're being honest. This, you know, what's more awkward than being honest? My God. And then tightening up, all I have to do is be honest about myself and not talk about anybody else. There's too many hours in the day. You know, but again, if I keep doing it, I will be in active recovery. Active recovery to me is working something or responding to a need. You know, I'm told I'm to stay sober and help other alcoholics to recover from sobriety. You know, that's my primary purpose now. Now I have one. You know, I'm pretty proud of that. I think that's unreal. And I don't really have a whole lot else to say. I'm not supposed to talk too long. I've been talking too long, I know it. It's great to see everybody. I wish everybody an excellent conference. And, you know, if something's going down, it doesn't feel good, share it. And you know what? If something's going really good, share it too. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you, Larry. I was just telling him that he actually hadn't talked too long. He still had some time left. Probably the reason that I was thinking of that is because when the instructions come in the mail for being a chairperson, it says, and if there's time left at the end, the chairperson can be prepared to share. And I thought, that's not going to happen because everybody, you know, they'll use their time and I won't have to share. But I guess this meeting goes for a while yet, so maybe I'll just share a little bit. You know, the theme was also mailed out for this meeting, the easy does it, but do it. So I kicked that around in my mind for a while, and I thought about that, and, you know, there was not too much I could think of about that. And so I did what I always do when I have something on my mind that I can't figure out, and I took that to my meeting. And in Concert, Alberta, we meet on Thursday nights at the Anglican Church basement. And so a couple weeks ago, the chairperson there asked if anybody had a topic for that meeting or anything they wanted to discuss. And I said, yes, I do. How about tonight we talk about easy does it, but do it? And I told them why. I said, there's going to be a meeting, and I have to chair that meeting, and that's what the theme of that meeting is. And so we went around the table, and I should tell you a little bit about Concert and Concert Group. Concert is actually a village in rural Alberta. We have about 700 people there in the town itself, and in the surrounding area there's more, might get us up to 1,500. But it's small. And, you know, I moved from there to Edmonton when I was finished school, and I lived there for 15 years before I moved back to Concert. So I have experienced city life and rural life as well. And out in Concert, we only have one meeting a week right now, and that's pretty important to me. I need to be there, you know. Sometimes we travel around to other meetings, but that doesn't happen as frequently now because Dave and I got married a few years ago, and it was his second marriage, and he had children from his first marriage, and because of the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have two of his boys living with us now full time. And that's pretty darn special, I'll tell you. But anyhow, that also makes it difficult to fit everything into our schedule at times, so we don't get to as many out-of-town meetings. So Thursday night, in Concert, Alberta, there's only one place I'm going to be, and that's at my home group. So anyhow, I kicked out that topic that night, and we went around the table. I think there was nine or ten people there that night, and that's on average what we get at our meeting the last while. And so I tried to write down a little bit of what everybody said that night, because I thought, you know, there's some members here that would really love to come to Toronto, but they can't for different personal reasons and things like that. And So some of the ideas that we got were do it as it comes, but don't get too worked up over it. Don't be fanatical. Keep moving forward without getting too far over the top. I really liked that one. I thought, I've got to share that there because, you know, that's a really wide spectrum on that one. You could probably, anybody could take that on and fit it into whatever they're thinking about, and, you know, it's good. One thing I didn't write down was the thing that I was thinking about the most for myself with the Easy Does It But Do It. And that came a few years back for me when I was actually trying to work on my fourth step. And, you know, I was terrified of that step, and I didn't want to look at a lot of that stuff from the past. And in my mind, I was just fighting it, and I was fighting it most of the time, and I really didn't want to do it. And then I heard at a meeting someone said, you know, perhaps if you're having trouble with a step or with that step, it's because you haven't done a proper step three. And I thought, oh, good, you know, this is me. Haven't done proper step three, so I can quit trying to do four, you know, and I can slide back to three. And I did do that for a while. But then at another meeting, I heard something else that got through to me at the time, and that was that you're never really standing still in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're either going forward or you're going backward. And I didn't want to be going backward because I didn't want to end up drinking again. And so I realized that for me, the Easy Does It was allowed me to think that I could, you know, slip back to three again and not work on my four. But then, of course, you have to remember the but do it. So I had to become vigilant again, and I had to work on my step four. And I did, and I wrote a lot of things down, and it was kind of a neat thing because another member, a girl that lived about 30 miles away that I knew pretty good, was new because she'd come into Al-Anon first, and then she crossed the floor and came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and she asked me to be her sponsor. And I got to sponsor her, and it was so neat. You know, our higher power, I always think I have such a special higher power. You know, he's worked so hard for me. You know, he put someone in my life to sponsor that had a lot of similarities in their past, you know, experiences too. And she was more vigilant about working her steps and doing her stuff. And one day she asked me if I'd listened to her step five, you know, and I'd been at a standstill again, you know, there I was, Easy Does It, you know, and I'd forgot about the but do it part, and I hadn't carried on and done my step five, but I told her, sure, I would listen to her step four. So she drove down to concert one night, it was winter time, I remember that, and we sat there for, quite a while, most of the evening, 4 or 5 hours maybe, and I listened to her step five, and it was so good because there was stuff in there that was so similar to some of my stuff that I'd written down. And when we got to the end of that evening, I said to her, oh, gee, you know, how would you like to come down next week and listen to my step four? And so we have a sponsee-sponsor relationship, and it's wonderful, you know. And I wanted to share that with you because that was the one main thing that popped into my head with that topic. It looks to me like we still have time left here, and I know that sometimes people have listened to the speakers and they have heard something that maybe jogs something in their memory. And so I don't want to scare anybody off, but I'm just wondering if anybody out there would like to share. Okay, sure, go ahead.
Oh, thanks very much. My name's Cynthia. I'm an alcoholic from Sydney, Australia. I really enjoyed the speakers, and Easy Does It But Do It is very close to my heart at the moment. I've got sober from drugs and alcohol 9 years ago in September, and I have multiple addictions. Got drugs, alcohol, cigarettes and food. I've found over the last since I've been in recovery. I've also had to deal with childhood abuse issues. And it's a lot on my plate, you know, to do one day at a time. And sometimes I feel a bit guilty that I'm not doing service and working the steps and having sponsees, and like everyone's got their 70-year anniversary books and they're all madly racing around getting everyone to meeting people at the convention and getting everyone to sign it. And I sort of like, I feel sort of shut down, like I've got to preserve my energy just to stay sober. And what I've actually done is I got sober nine years ago in September, and I chain smoked and drank coffee and ate whatever I wanted for 5 years, and then I reached a rock bottom with my cigarette addiction. And 4 years ago, I put down cigarettes. I tried to get off them for the 5 years, but I just didn't succeed. And then eventually I put them down, and I went through like feeling like a newcomer all over again, feeling raw and emotionally raw. And, and now I've clocked up 4 years off the cigarettes, and now I'm 6 months. I've just joined a food program that uses the same 12 steps as AA, and I've lost quite a lot of weight, over 40 pounds, and because my food addiction was just taking off and I was getting really big and I was just eating all the time, and now I feel like I've had the first step on every level of all my addictions, and it's sort of like now I can get on with my life, and I've sort of got the first step in its entirety now. It's like each level of addiction that I'm powerless over, I've put that down, and I've got an increase in my manageability in my life. And it's really important to me to be free of all my addictions, and that's just the way I need to do my sobriety. But, you know, the easy does it but do it really attracted me today to come to the meeting, because I can only do, you know, I've just had a baby 8 months ago, and I'm working and supporting my partner and my baby, and there's only so much I can handle. Like this new program that I'm in, you're supposed to make 3 outreach calls a day, have half an hour quiet time in the morning, get on your knees morning and night and pray to God, and do all the things that I know I should be doing. But I just think, well, when I first came into AA, everyone just said easy does it, but do it. And I did do it, but I had that easy does it philosophy, and I didn't let anyone pressure me, and I did it when I felt ready. And, you know, like when I did my 4th step, I was 2 years sober. And so with me, I've got the willingness to do all these things which I know are good for my spiritual health, like getting on my knees. I do write every night in my journal. I keep a strict step 10. But there's a lot of things in the program that I'm not doing perfectly, and sometimes I feel guilty about it. But then when I know there's a meeting like this on that says easy does it but do it, I kind of I feel better, because I know that I don't have to beat myself up. And, you know, there'll come a time when, like today, I thought I should get on the telephone more and ring people and talk about, you know, what I'm doing to stay off my food addiction. And there's a lot of people in AA who have got the same problem, and I just sort of go into my own shell, and I don't reach out as much as I should. But coming to AA conventions really helps me, because I get the willingness to do the suggested things. And I've just been travelling with a man from Australia with 50 years sobriety, and we went to Dr. Bob's house, and we went to Stepping Stones, and I got emotional about my sobriety, and I got a lot of gratitude about, you know, the fact that if it wasn't for AA, where would I be? and and at the same as when I went to the food conference a few weeks ago, I got the willingness to, you know, to do the getting on my knees and reaching out to people and having half an hour quiet time and reading the 24-hour day book and reading the big book every night. And I really struggle, you know, with doing all these things, but it's just getting the willingness back. And as soon as I hit it off with another alcoholic and that spark happens, or I start listening to people sharing their experience, strength and hope, I get, it happens in me every time, and I get like pushed along on my path, on my spiritual path. So thanks for listening.
Thank you, Cynthia. I can see that everybody's getting restless, and it might be, what is it that Dr. Bob says? You can only absorb so much through the seat of your pants. So maybe it is getting to be time for us to close this meeting. I would once again like to thank our speakers very much. Please help me close this meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.